Welcome to Music Forever, a podcast by the New Horizons International Music Association. I am Irene Cohen.
Colin Enright is a PhD candidate in music education interdisciplinary studies at McGill University in Montreal, where he researches group music in community and educational settings and its effects on mental health, resilience, and general well-being. He is co-director and principal conductor for the Montreal New Horizons Band and works as a vocal coach and band director for the Préville Fine Arts Center, a not-for-profit arts education organization on Montreal's South Shore. Having previously worked as an elementary and high school music teacher and as a conductor and musical director in the Montreal area, he is a member of the Next Gen Advisory Council of the Coalition for Music Education in Canada, where he works to embed evidence-based health and wellness practices in music learning and engagement. He is co-editor of the upcoming volume Pedagogies for Later Life Music Learning and Participation, Facilitating Creative Musical Development in Later Life. Colin is a director of the board of the New Horizons International Music Association since 2025. This interview took place in May 2025 via Zoom. Well, welcome, Colin, to Music Forever. Our first question usually is, how did music get in your life?
I think the first biggest influence for me was through my dad. He's not a musician himself, but he had, and he still has, a prolific collection of music. So when I was growing up, he had a huge collection of vinyl, cassette tapes, CDs. A lot of it is converted to digital now. Within the span of a week, I'd hear Tracy Chapman playing, Reba McEntire, Beethoven's Fifth from a collection of symphonies that he had, Elvis, Aretha Franklin, Black Sabbath, The Rolling Stones, Mary Chapin Carpenter, Joni Mitchell, Sarah McLachlan, Garth Brooks. There was just early and constant exposure to music in many styles that was just woven into the fabric of daily life. I think he is just a curious person and he wanted to know more and he wanted to inform himself. So he doesn't listen regularly to symphonies, orchestral music. But when he found it at this flea market, he grabbed a collection of Beethoven symphonies because he was like, I've never heard it before and I just want to listen. I know that it's like a part of culture and I want to hear it.
Did you grow up in Montreal?
I was born in Montreal and then I lived briefly outside Montreal in Saint-Eustache. But when I was six, I moved to a small town in the Ottawa Valley called Arnprior, about 45 minutes west of Ottawa. And then when I was 18, I moved back and I've been here now ever since, and I'm about to turn 33. What I like about living in Montreal and having Anglophone and Francophone friends and working in these bilingual environments, that I can sit down and have an entire conversation with someone where they're speaking in French and I'm speaking in English and we both understand each other and that's fine.
And of course, we're here today to talk about the third language that all of us speak as musicians, and that is the language of music. No matter what language you speak, we can speak it together or play it together.
And understand each other as we're doing it, or feel the same thing, or convey the same message as one.
Yes, very true. There was enough interest sparked for you to start doing something with music. And can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I always loved music, but I don't think I saw myself as a musician. From seven, my grandmother helped to pay for piano lessons for my sister and I, and we got a small electric keyboard. When I was a little bit older than that, I started with voice lessons. And later in life, I realized how lucky I was to go to the high school that I did, because even though it was in this small town, Arnprior, of about 7,000 people at the time, our high school was about 700. It was a very impressive music program. We had a junior band, senior band, jazz band, Dixieland band, jazz choir, band classes, piano, keyboard classes, guitar classes. There were musicals. We competed in band and choir festivals, the National Jazz Festival. We went on band trips. So there was all of this stuff, and I was regularly a part of it. I think I had this perception in my mind that I lacked the raw talent that it takes to be a musician, which is a mindset I work so hard to absolutely eradicate with any other person that I work with now, any other student. I was really deeply interested in law and politics and political science, and that's what I was originally doing in my undergrad. For one of my electives, though, in my undergraduate, I decided to take a music course, and I think that was about theory rudiments. And that one elective snowballed into three more electives, and that turned into a faculty transfer into music, into the music education program. The choir, the ensembles, even just the building, just the thrill of being immersed in music was something that I had to follow. All of the really meaningful moments in my life up until that point had revolved around music, and specifically music learning, moments that as a teenager got me through what felt like some really insurmountable challenges. And I think at that point early in university, pre and post the transition into music, it started becoming really, really clear to me that I wanted to contribute to and to carry on a tradition of music education and community that I felt I was very fortunate to have, that protected me and supported me. I did a Bachelor of Music in Music Education and Voice, along with a Bachelor's of Education. Then I taught, and I returned to school after that. I completed a Master's in Music Education. I'm currently doing my doctoral research in music education interdisciplinary studies, psychology.
What does your research involve?
It really is connected to my time as a teacher. I ended up working at a few different schools and cobbling together subbing and small contracts to make up for the fact that I didn't have a 100% gig, and I really loved it. I loved working with teenagers. I would go back in a heartbeat if the opportunity presented itself, but I did have a bit of a career shift, because while I was there, something was happening wherever I went. Where I was teaching in schools, I was on various academic committees. And no matter what school board, what neighborhood, we were coming up against really high rates of stress, anxiety, and depression among the students, to the point where some of them weren't able to function at school. And in some places, there was actually survey data to support what the staff was saying, where we could see year after year, the rate of anxiety and depression was going up and up and up and up. What I was seeing as a music teacher was students saying that music class was one space that felt like a refuge, or at least a space where they could wrestle with and take on those feelings. I had known from just cultural osmosis, various classes, books, and reading, that music could function in therapeutic ways, that it could be good for health, but I had never really given it much stock. But this, what was happening and what I was seeing and hearing right in front of me, that got me really curious. I was wondering, is there something that we are doing or that we could be doing in music classes that is supporting students who are struggling with their mental health, who need resources and may not always have access to them? So I applied to grad school. I had questions. I wanted to find answers. And here I am. So my master's thesis research was a project examining the negotiation of mental health and general well-being through music ensembles during COVID-19. And now my doctoral research is investigating the development of psychological resilience in group music. I started my master's research on that relationship between mental health and music in 2019. And then March 2020 hit. And prior to that, I had been doing my literature review, and I look a lot at provincial, national, and global rates of mental health among many age groups. And in 2019, there was a lot of data to support the fact that over the past decade, the rates of anxiety and stress and depression were skyrocketing. And then the pandemic hit. I think we have moved on very quickly from it. But even at the time, as it was happening, you had all of these researchers, clinicians, psychologists, counselors saying, we are going to see an echo of this for decades in mental health trends and in ways that there's no way for us to predict what this is going to look like. We see that it has gone up even more than the rate that was happening prior to 2020. Mm-hmm. In terms of research that supports music for mental health, there is a ton. A lot of it is done in therapeutic contexts. So with a music therapist, which is a very specific context, right? Because it is like working with a medical professional and they are using music for therapeutic interventional practices. So for example, like a neuro music therapist might be using music in a very specific way to help with someone who has suffered a stroke and they're trying to improve their gait. And they're are very, very specific steps, right? It's very clinical. It's not just, let's play some music and see what happens. It's a very specific type of music at a very specific tempo. There are a lot of choices and it's very regulated. And I find that incredibly, incredibly interesting. It informs a lot of what I do, but that's not what I do and not what I research. I'm primarily interested in music, group music, in educational and community contexts. When it's not being run by a licensed therapist or clinician, and what are the effects of that? As I said, you see things across the spectrum where you can focus a lot on development and achievement. There are wonderful effects there. And while that doesn't immediately sound like it's directly related to mental health, it is. Because when someone learns something, when they accomplish something, when they feel that they have overcome a challenge, it does give someone a sense of agency. I have worth. I'm smart. I'm capable. I achieved this. There's also things that are more, I think, in a lot of people's minds, directly related to mental health, things like emotional regulation. So when we're playing music, our emotions come into it in many different ways. There usually is a narrative or an idea or a feeling that is attached to the phrase or the piece as a whole. You can feel that emotion very, very powerfully with everyone around you as you're playing it, especially near concert time where you've been working on that piece for months and you've really polished it and you've got it to a point where it sounds so good. And that feeling comes across every time. That's a very interesting phenomenon. In particular, when you are wrestling with something, if you come into that rehearsal and you did not have a good day, if something really upsetting happened, if you had some bad news that maybe you got that day, and you play a piece that leans in very strongly to a heavy emotion, and you feel that can be a huge release, and it can help you work through that emotion. So that regulation side of things is also very important. We also have the social dynamic, which is just you're around people and you're cooperating and you're building something, you're working towards something with them. To that idea of language again, you're not chatting the entire time you're in a rehearsal and you're playing music, but you are speaking and you're speaking together. You are communicating with each other in a certain way. You're listening very actively to each other. Again, that sense of communication, that sense of I am with people and we're all doing something together, it works wonders for a person's sense of connection and community and the whole biopsychosocial model of health. We can't just focus on, well, what's going on chemically or physiologically inside the body. There are a whole number of factors that affect health. Even on top of that, too, in terms of the social effects, you make friends when you're there, right? There can be effects like, I don't have a car, and my nearest hospital and clinician is pretty far, so I don't very often go. But I made a friend in the band, and they live near me, and they do have a car. And they said, hey, I can drive you out there. Like though there, I study resilience now and how people are able to stay healthy or bounce back and things like that, what we call protective factors in one's community and one's environment, very, very impactful. And we're still trying to understand and identify all of the factors that can possibly be related to music and group music in the community and in classrooms. There is particular concern for older adults just because at that age, you naturally start to lose friends. Your community starts to shrink. And loneliness and isolation are a huge concern for the World Health Organization. And there are predictions that depression is going to overtake every other health concern by 2030. Cancer, AIDS, worldwide, depression is the number one, related to isolation, is the number one health concern in our near future. And for older adults, that's a very big concern, not only because of the loss of community, but also physically, you stop being able to move around as much. It's not easy for you to go out and to meet people. So having these resources and things in place where you are connected to people, you still feel that you have worth and you are contributing and you are learning. Learning doesn't stop as soon as you get out of school. Everyone is a lifelong learner. These are really important resources regardless of your age. I saw the question sheet that you sent, and there, I think the last question was, what would I say to someone who is thinking about picking up a musical instrument, wants to return to music or learn music? What would I say? And I would say you've made an amazing, wonderful decision, and I hope and expect it will vastly impact your life for the better. For anyone beyond the age of maybe 35 or 40, the prospect of learning a new skill or skill set, especially one where you're required to be vulnerable, where your mistakes are laid bare for everyone to hear them, that can be very, very daunting. So I think it's brave and admirable. Second, as a teacher, I would say, give yourself grace. In terms of new skills and learning progression, music can be a very slow one where we see significant plateau before the consequent spurts of growth and learning achievement. Most people take up an instrument because they want to be able to play a specific piece or genre, or they want to play for family or friends. They don't pick up a musical instrument to sound bad or to play scales or long tones for hours on end. But that is part of the process. And you must embrace sounding bad and making mistakes, because that is how you learn. And with a musical instrument, you're learning so many different things all at the same time. You are learning, again, back to language, you are learning to read and to speak at the same time, which we never do, right? You always learn to speak a language before you start writing it. But here, we are learning to speak and read a new language at the same time, to use your muscles and your body in a new and foreign ways, to breathe in a completely different way than you do every single day of your life since birth, to multitask, and really more than anything else, you're learning how to listen. You're learning to listen actively to everyone around you, work in tandem with them. You're not one person in a band, you are a unit. You're a family, and you constantly have to lean on each other for support, to be tuned in. And that's a big learning curve. Coming back to music or learning how to play as an adult, you're exercising a muscle that sometimes, not always, is a bit out of practice and sometimes much more in line and much more used to a very conservative, very top-down, master-apprentice, passive way of learning where knowledge is lectured by the teacher and absorbed by the student. And despite this still being prevalent in North America, this is not an effective way of learning. But the great news is that as an adult now, the reins are in your hands and you probably have a much greater degree of self-awareness than when you were in school. So I would say take advantage of that self-awareness. Really take an active role in this process. Set objectives, set goals, evaluate yourself constantly and think, what can I do today that I couldn't do yesterday? What do I want to be able to do tomorrow or next week? And can I make a plan to get there? And of course, always ask for help from your teachers, your conductors, but also from your fellow musicians. They're going through similar challenges. They may have perspectives and strategies that I and other teachers have not considered. In the best of circumstances, the perfect scenario, the learning process is deeply individually driven and is happening all around you. So embrace that. It's hard work, but there's a lot of fun that comes with it. My primary goal for my students when I was teaching high school, the first thing I would say to them on the first day was, this class does not expressly exist to turn you into orchestral professional musicians. My goal in a music class is to help you learn how to be an empathetic human being who is able to cooperate and work with other people. And when you're in a music ensemble like New Horizons, where you're constantly learning to do that, it's also profoundly impactful on your health and well-being to have a social network, a sense of support, a place where you feel like you're part of a community and where you're valued. And that really is at the heart of the New Horizons philosophy too.
Tell us a little bit about your personal music choice, voice being your main instrument. How did you find out about your voice? How did you decide that voice was going to be your way of expressing music?
I think because it was the most accessible instrument. Even before I had a concept of whether there was good singing and bad singing, I just liked singing. And my parents, of course, encouraged it. My mom, she really, really encouraged that. I really do love teaching voice now, too. It's one of my favorite things that I do. I think learning to sing is such a freeing and a beautiful process where you learn not just how to use your voice, but to love it and to appreciate it. And I love being able to pass that on and help students to find their own voice now. I did not love my voice for a very, very long time. As a gay man, I got made fun of quite a bit for my voice, and I felt very ashamed of it, and I didn't like using it, and I didn't want to be heard all of the time. I have no other words for it. It feels like you're flying. When you're singing and you're really expressing it, it's like when you're playing in band too, and you're executing things at the highest level. It feels like freedom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Okay, so once upon a time, somebody must have approached you about New Horizons. And tell us a little bit how you got involved with that.
So my very dear friend, my mentor, colleague, Audrey Christelle Barbeau, at the Department of Music at UQAM, actually started the Montreal New Horizons Band as part of her doctoral research on active music making and seniors' health. And that was when I was an undergraduate at McGill. She was actually my TA for instrumental conducting. So she started that in 2014, which means that MNHB just celebrated its 10th anniversary last year. And Audrey did some really amazing work when she set it up. She collaborated with the music faculty at McGill so that the New Horizons members, in addition to having their own group, they also were invited to come play in the music education ensemble and in the conducting classes. So the students in the music ed program got to know a lot of these folks. I did during my undergrad. In 2022, when things started to open up again after the pandemic, Audrey reached out to me to say that they needed a teacher and associate conductor for their initiation band, complete beginners, and then the beginner intermediate band, which we call Adagio. And I jumped at that opportunity because I just love when band. I love band so much. And because also my good friend and now colleague, Marianne Generale, she was also working there. And all three of us, Audrey, Marianne, and I, are researchers in the area of music, health, education, and community. So I was very excited to be in that environment where you're combining musical performance, education, research, and best practices. Fast forward, after Audrey was hired at the University of UQAM, she eventually decided that given the workload there, she needed to step back from the group, and she asked if Marianne and I would step in as co-directors. Mm-hmm. So I am now a principal conductor on the teaching team, and I am co-director with Marianne of the Montreal New Horizons Band.
At some point in time, you started to get an interest in New Horizons International. and are currently one of our new board directors for 2025. Explain a little bit for people out there maybe who are interested to also join our board in the future. What was the part that interested you in this?
There were several people in our band who were regular members of NEMA and who mentioned, like, there are these band camps. There are, like, you can go and you can meet people from all over the world.
In order to run a nonprofit successfully and to stay up to date and to ensure that good programming is being delivered and that there's value for our members is a continuous job. And currently we have 12 directors on the board. The board is actually larger this year because of the amount of work that is required to keep an organization like this going. I would like to thank you for joining this board, but also all the other directors of the board who are the people in behind the scenes who make all this happen and do so voluntarily.
Everyone who is there because they care deeply about this work. They care deeply about music and the community that it brings. So you are working with like minds who are invested and want things to work and want it to be a wonderful experience for everyone. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much for doing this and good luck with your studies. Hopefully this will be your last year and the entire career that comes after that. So thank you so much for doing this podcast, Colin.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I would like to thank Colin Enright for doing this interview. If you would like to find out more about Colin's New Horizons band, please go to the website of Montreal New Horizons Band at www.nhmontreal.com. Music for this podcast by Mary Riddle, Swag On. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Music Forever. If you are interested to be interviewed for this podcast, please email us at nhimapodcast@gmail.com. That is nhimapodcast@gmail.com. See you next time.